It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we're back with our next installment of the series, Black Queer Rising. This month, we're highlighting stories of change makers who are rooted in Black queer history and working to forge Black queer futures. We're going to the state of Texas for our next change maker.
My name is Jalen McKee Rodriguez, and I am a city councilman in San Antonio, District 2.
Councilman McKee Rodriguez is the first openly gay Black man elected to public office in Texas. But before he became a councilman, he was a math teacher.
Yes, I was a math teacher. Got my start in 17 is when I started my career in education.
And how does one go from being a math teacher to a member of the city council?
You know what's funny? My degree is actually in communication. So I thought I was going to be working in advertising or something like that. But I was around the time that Trump got elected, I got involved in campaigns and politics. And while I was teaching, I continued my involvement. And around the time that this time last year, I was encouraged to run for office.
So I love that. I feel like I should say, okay, all you comm majors out there, note, you may end up as a math teacher.
Yes, I was, I had graduated and I was, you know, obviously you graduate with a liberal arts degree and you think, where are the high paying jobs?
Yes, teaching, definitely. That's where where you rake in the big cash, especially teaching and then definitely city council. I'm sure y'all are making the low seven figures there.
Oh, I definitely took a pay cut from teaching.
Oh, so actually, let's pause on that. I mean, we're joking, but, you know, we do in this country not pay our teachers enough. And as a Southerner, respectfully, the South is particularly egregious in the extent to which we don't pay our teachers enough. I don't think, however, we often think about our local representatives, whether it's at the city council level, at the state house. I think we tend to think of them like members of Congress and presume that these are full-time, well-paid jobs, as opposed to understanding that if you're really talking about public service, this is where the public and the service meet.
Absolutely. And I was actually surprised. I believe it's our state representatives make about 7,000 per session, which is every other year. So they really have to have other jobs. And I think when we're talking about public service in this capacity, it makes it really hard for regular working class people to run for office because they know they're not going to be able to sustain themselves off of this pay.
Now, when you ran initially, you actually ran against someone for whom you'd worked. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So my predecessor, I was her director of communication for about 6 months. And during that time, the chief of staff was very homophobic and created a very hostile work environment. And I ended up leaving and got back into education and decided I was going to take a break from politics. But I stay involved in the organizing world and in activist spaces, and people encouraged me to run for the seat. And so that became quite a story.
That is quite a story. And you know, I think many folks experience those kinds of barbs and challenges and distressing workplace environments, particularly around questions of gender or gender self-expression or queer identity or race, or particularly as a gay Black man for you living at the intersections of some of those. And yet, to feel empowered enough to think, you know what, I know how I can change this, I'll actually run for the seat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that what was very interesting is that during the general election, I think I was very much an underdog, and the issue of sexuality didn't really come up too much. But then when it was the runoff and it's just me and the incumbent, that became the story. It was, you know, the faith-based community versus Jalen. And this past October, I actually filed a CCR calling for an expansion to our city's non-discrimination ordinance. And I think it's very poetic in a sense.
Because, of course, just to go back for a second to that dichotomy, there are no queer folk in the faith community.
I don't know who's believing that necessarily, but, you know.
Right. But again, communities that intersect and overlap. So talk to me about being the first openly gay Black man to be elected to any public office in the state of Texas.
It's crazy. And, you know, my team and I, we spent a lot of time thinking about that after the election, is that like, I really am the first and the district really did this. And it means a lot, as in the way that I feel as though I carry a lot of that burden or a lot of pressure to represent well, because I know I'm not the first to try. I'm not the first to be qualified, and I'm not the first with the passion and gumption to go after it, but I'm the first to be given a chance. And so I want to make it easier for the second and third, for those who come after me, to get through the door.
It's such a good point. It's in certain ways completely wild that in 2020, that we can be talking about first still. But of course, also
It's Texas.
Okay, I'll give you that. It is Texas, but still, we're well into the 21st century here. Apparently. And, you know, I have feelings about this, but you outranked Beyonce on the Roots Black Influencer list?
You know, I would challenge that, too. I don't think any list that anyone ranks above Beyonce is valid, but I am so, like, I'm so grateful. And I will give that she did take a break for a year. So her influence is still great.
But I think sabbatical Beyonce that you're ranked higher than.
yes. But I think... you know, a lot of it was the history-making nature of the campaign and what it means for a lot of people, because the regular everyday people, people of all racial and marginalized identities, really don't feel represented by our elected officials. And so I think and I hope that my election gave people hope.
Let's dig in on that a bit and talk about what it means to represent not only in identity, but in policy. Talk to me about some of the things that you're working to accomplish, and maybe particularly around the issue of food availability and utility.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of the CCRs, the council consideration requests that I filed. So in San Antonio, we have council consideration requests, which are basically memos authored by a council person and then signed by four other council members. And so in October, I filed a non-discrimination ordinance CCR. And then this January, I filed a CCR calling for an insulin cost share program. A separate one. I think I might have set a record. I filed quite a bit. One would be an Office of Crime and Recidivism. One was displacement studies for new development. Another one, an animal care services master plan to increase our live release rates and to reduce the number of stray animals, as well as a food access master plan to address food deserts. And there's another one, and then there's the CPS and SAWS, our utilities, a rate freeze for seniors and folks with disabilities. And when I think of the last one, I'll drop it.
You've also been vocal about the ban on gay men being able to donate blood. Talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah, so this is something that a lot of people don't know about, and I brought this up on the dais, and city staff were telling me they had no idea. And these are people in well-connected spaces. And so I don't think the average person knows that gay men and bisexual men cannot give blood. And we're in the middle of, you know, a blood shortage in America. It's very critical. And for a huge segment of the population to be basically banned from it is unacceptable. I'm a 26-year-old healthy man, and I can't give blood, even though, you know, my blood could save someone's life, and I'm not being given that chance.
Right. And this is, of course, a policy that goes back to the HIV/AIDS crisis and the sort of belief that it was related exclusively to identity rather than being a contagious disease.
Yes. And it's crazy. So I'm married. I'm in a monogamous relationship, but other men who are straight and are having unprotected sex and, you know, doing the most, they're able to give blood. And I think at the end, I think, you know, we know that science has evolved and all blood is screened for anything that can be any transmittable diseases. And so it really just goes back to these archaic views of homosexuality, which are outdated and homophobic, and it quite honestly harming our country, not just the LGBTQ community, but all of those who are in need of blood right now.
I'm kind of down for you introducing a new rule that says, okay, we're not going to do this based on sexuality and identity, but just if you're doing the most, maybe keep your blood.
Well, no, there's still space. There's still space for everyone to give blood. It is screened. So I think if you're in a place where you can give blood, I think you should be able to.
Jalen, I have one last question for you. This is this conversation is part of our series, Black Queer Rising. And when you hear me say those words, Black Queer Rising, what does that mean to you?
Ooh. I mean, I definitely think that you hit on the intersectionality, right? You know, I live my life not only as a Black man and not only as a gay man, but as a gay Black man who's young, who's, you know, the son of veterans, who's not, you know, I'm not a wealthy person. And it makes me think of, you know, all those things that, all those barriers and challenges that are set in my way that I have to overcome. And so I think that's where the rising comes into play. And I think that as a society, we're growing, we're rising. As a people, I think we're becoming much more aware of the issues and the intersectionality of all of these different marginalized groups. And you know, I think it's powerful.
Thank you so much, Jalen McKee Rodriguez, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.